When he took the job, Kansas City Schools Superintendent Steve Green found a district without state accreditation. And just over 3 years later, he'll be leaving that position with the district provisionally accredited. And just this week, Blue Valley Superintendent Tom Trigg announced he'll be leaving his post. Good morning, I'm Matthew Law Middleton, in for Gina Kaufman, and today on Central Standard, we'll be asking how important are superintendents in shaping the districts they serve. But first, we'll take you to the corner of Main Street and Westport Road with its iconic broken clock tower. Times are changing there. Meet some of those characters right after the news.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
Ready for a haircut?
Yeah.
Maurice?
Phyllis's barbershop on Main Street and Westport Road has been around for 30 years. It's an old school shop with retro chairs and decor, including the classic red and blue barber's pole out front.
Okay, Kenny, what can I do for you today?
Okay, trim it lightly on top.
Trim it lightly on top.
Skin fade high and tight.
Skin fade high and tight.
That's right.
Razor line or clipper line?
Razor line.
Phyllis Manley has seen a lot of changes over the past 2.5 years, and not just in hairstyles. The neighborhood has changed around her as well. This is Central Standard. I'm Matthew Law Middleton. Gina Kaufman is away. Today, we're going to explore a micro neighborhood on the edge of Westport, right around Main Street and Westport Road. Something's afoot there, and things have been changing lately. And joining me in studio to help explore this micro neighborhood is Phyllis Manley. She's the owner of Phyllis's Barbershop on Main Street. Phyllis, welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, good morning.
So, Phyllis, you've been cutting hair at this intersection for almost 25 years now?
That's correct. About 25 years.
Where did you come from before that?
Basically, I was on the east side of town, 31st Street.
Hmm. And why did you want to move to Westport and Maine? Like, what brought you there?
Well, basically, I think I should start off by saying I've been cutting hair all my life, and I cut hair in the military, and then I came back home to Kansas City, and I cut on the east side of town, and I said, well, I'll cut on the west side of town, and I was going to go downtown, but I sort of found my home on Westport and Maine.
So were you like kind of bouncing around between shops at that point, or like was this like a big step for you to like, you know, lease your own space and, you know, like, you know, be like, this is going to be my barbershop, going to be run the way I want to run it, and that kind of thing?
Basically, when I came to Westport and Maine, it felt like home.
Right.
You know, I felt very comfortable. The neighborhood was, stable, and, it was just a great place. I felt like this was it, so...
Can you describe that to me a little bit? So it was about like 1990. I wasn't here at that time, but
I was born.
I don't know. I was definitely born. I just happened to be in another part of the world at that point. But can you describe to me, like, you know, what was that neighborhood like then? You know, sights, smells, the people, and that kind of thing.
Let me see. 1990. It was very stable. It was very quiet. Conservative.
What do you mean by stable and conservative? Like, was everyone in a suit and tie? What does that mean to you?
Conservative, I would say, we had anchor churches. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the churches that were an anchor, you know, sort of mm-hmm. like there's 40th in Maine. It was First Calvary Baptist Church on Baltimore. And, you know, further on down, there were, you know, different churches and, had a feel of, stability and, you know, conservativeness. However, where CVS is right now, it used to be Rosie's Cafeteria or restaurant. It used to be a big restaurant there.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was pretty interesting. You know, people could have breakfast or, you know, at the other end of Maine and 40th, it was a grocery store. People would come and, you know, just sort of stay there, do a little shopping and leave.
Yeah. Would you describe it as having more foot traffic, more traffic in general, or about the same? You know, what was it like to be kind of, you know, running the barbershop over the course of the day there?
It was more foot traffic. Mm-hmm. You know, it was more foot traffic. And I don't know if we had a bus system. I don't know if we had a bus system that was, you know, sort of, you know, active at that time. So it was more foot traffic.
Would you describe it as like a tight-knit community when you were there those first few years?
It was. It was a very tight-knit. People that were used to that area, you know, they would patronize that area.
And did you have certain friends that were like, you know, rocks for you in that neighborhood?
I did. I had a lot of friends, and I had a lot of newcomers, and I had a lot of older you know, clients that would come. And as a matter of fact, there was a guy named Charlie Fisher. He had an automobile franchise up the street. One day he came into the barbershop and he said, you know, this is a very important barbershop. And I said, well, why is that, sir? And he said, because Walt Disney used to get his hair cut in my barbershop. And I said, is that right?
Were you? Did you go around looking for scraps of his hair and, you know, sell on eBay? And
well, basically, I did have an old barber chair that was way back in a, you know, cubby hole. And it was an old barber pole. And it was like from the 1950s. So
it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
You were mentioning that, you know, it was more tight-knit. It had a lot of walking traffic. What were some of the turning points in the neighborhood, you know, that kind of changed some of that?
the economy. I'm sure it changed just a little bit. However, everyone in the community sort of respected the people, and therefore it really did not get, you know, too negative. However, some of the businesses and some of the retailers, they sort of came and went. So it changed, but it really didn't get really bad.
And was there like some precipitating moment that like really, you know, for you stood out as like, oh, wow, like this neighborhood has kind of changed dramatically?
Well, like I said, there were anchor churches there. And, you know, just before it would get really, really bad or not necessarily bad or change. Oh, there were some churches that would open the doors for dinner for people if, you know, if that was the case. However, there were always people that would come in and help out.
Yeah, I remember learning that, you know, there was quite an event at the drugstore. Demetrius Davis passed away there, and there were protests in front of that drugstore. Do you recall that?
I do remember that, and it was unfortunate. And it was an unfortunate incident for the family and the drugstore because it was an anchor retailer also. And, you know, it was unfortunate for, you know, the man to lose his life. However,
were you there that day when
I was not there that day, you know. And I think if I had been there, things would have changed because I was used to the retailer and, you know, the people, you know, the people that were, you know, in the neighborhood at the time.
And to fill us in on that story, he was killed while suspected of shoplifting. You know, it kind of harkens to some of the stuff we see even today a little bit, where he was retained, you know, restrained, and the security at that Osco drugstore, you know, kind of handled it in a way perhaps they shouldn't have.
I think we all learned a lesson from that. In that particular area, and you know, there were you know, were things that were put in place to sort of curb maybe a shoplifting. You know, everybody sort of you know, helped in you know, recognizing a need. Like for example, if there was you know, some I need some bus fare, or I need you know, some shoes or something like that, then some of the retailers and even myself, we would, you know, say, okay, here's some bus fare, or maybe you need a haircut to clean yourself up, you know, and, you know, maybe you're a veteran, you know, because the veterans, they have, every now and then they'll have, they call it stand down, you know, and, you know, we would sort of, you know, drive the people toward a stand down so they could get new boots, new shoes, and stuff like that. However, that's just one part of Westport. It's not the whole thing.
Yeah, no, and I feel like that's like kind of the complicated thing about this. As I was reading about it and hearing about it, it seemed like this kind of like big event, and you know, that shortly thereafter the drugstore closed down, mm-hmm. correct? And you know, and then literally time started to stand still there, you know, at the clock tower itself.
Right.
But obviously the neighborhood's still changing, and I want to bring in Sean Starwitz to kind of talk about some of those changes. Sean Starwitz is the co-founder of Talk Shop, which is located right next to you, Phyllis, right?
Yes.
And he is also the creative liaison to the drugstore. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
And so can you tell me a little bit about the work you've done at Talk Shop and with the drugstore, and what got you involved and brought you to this neighborhood?
Yeah, well, I only live, you know, not even a mile away. And I've always been kind of interested in that building. I mean, it's a beautiful Art Deco building and the clock tower and all that kind of stuff. But actually, what had happened is Redeemer Fellowship bought the drugstore.
The church in that mm-hmm. neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. On Baltimore. And they approached 12 artists. And I was one of the original 12 that said, here's a building. Don't die in it. And after the first year, us 12 got together and we kind of designed this space, which is now what the drugstore is, which is about 25 artist studios, and a gallery and exhibition and public program space in the front, and then a variety of kind of, you know, we're trying to work on community engagements, and that's kind of mm-hmm. why I've been appointed to this creative liaison position, because it's about being a liaison between the studio residents and Main Street, and also Main Street and the drugstore. Mm. So it's kind of a way to kind of work with Phyllis and work with some of the businesses that have kind of popped up there and kind of make more of that tight-knit community. The Talk Shop is a kind of collaborative space that's run that really focuses on public programs. So our first or our most recent project was collaborating with Stand Up KC, and we did an exhibition called I2M in America,
which we featured on this program 3 weeks ago today, actually.
Yep. So we hosted their first exhibition, and then we've been doing a variety of kind of public programs that engage issues of arts and civic engagement.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you lived here. What about the neighborhood, you know, besides close proximity to it, were you most excited about kind of utilizing and you know, taking, for lack of a better term, taking advantage of, but in a positive
yeah.
way?
Yeah, well, that's a whole other conversation, right?
Yeah.
Displacement
exactly.
practices.
Right, exactly.
So for me, you know, I'm an active community member, and for me, it's about how do we find pathways to regeneration and not displacement and gentrification. So for me, I think, and it's an age-old question, you know, did the chicken become before the egg and vice versa? And there's a lot of controversy around artists being kind of the first-tier gentrifiers.
Yeah, that's what, I mean, it kind of comes to mind. I was thinking, listening to you and feeling like, oh, I've heard shades of this story mm-hmm. before. So explain, help me understand how you're hoping, you know, that this might be similar and different at
yeah,
the same time.
Well, you know, Kansas City is a great case study for a lot of this stuff, because you have failures like Power and Light, which is a top-down development subsidy that's been backed by the city that's failing. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Crossroads, right? It's a PIEA tax abatement program that kind of grew organically through artists, and then the artists were smart enough and the building owners were smart enough to approach the city and say, hey, we should have a tax abatement so that when this neighborhood gets kind of gentrified or cool, we can still maintain our properties. So you have two kind of case studies that have happened here before, right? Mm-hmm. I think P&L and Crossroads is a great juxtaposition. And I think that's kind of the vibe that we're trying to go for in Midtown, is to not be gentrifiers and not be displacement practitioners, because the issue too really lies between, you know, artists don't really have capital, so it's kind right. of like they're the gazelle on the prairie, and then the lions are the developers that come in and kind of see the
that's
potential.
A very graphic
yeah well,
it's also a very leading depiction of the relationship, but go on.
That's kind of how it works. So I mean, I think from the very get-go we've been very adamant about that conversation, and we've wanted to work with Phyllis a lot. Phyllis ran her hot dog cart. We had every business open for our First Friday event, which we're not going to traditionally do First Friday. That was just kind of a fluke thing, because Maker Goods, which is on Westport, it's mm-hmm. the end kind of print shop, and American Handmade Goods Shop. They wanted to have their grand opening, so we collaborated with everybody to kind of have this kind of Friday night event to bring back that foot traffic and to kind of create a kind of safe pedestrian kind of district. And the neighborhood's super rich. I mean, Harlings has been there forever. And including their prices.
Do you mean rich in history?
Yeah. Like, I mean, the Art Deco that's there. Yeah. I mean, the ceramic tiles on Harling, that has got to be one of the most beautiful buildings in the city, I think, mm-hmm. right? And then you kind of got the Scientologist building that has a little bit of it, too. And then you kind of have that, like, Main Street, 1980s neon. You got the drugstore. You got, Redeemer's Church is a beautiful mm-hmm. building. So it's a very eclectic architectural feel. And I was always interested in how they're it just kind of seemed what are the roads to regeneration and what does that look like? And we're exploring that. We might not have all the answers, but I think we're willing to ask the tough questions.
Right. And Phyllis, listening to this, I'm curious what your experience has been. I mean, like, when was it? Did Sean come to you and say, hey, we're moving in? Like, what's been your experience about this whole development?
Well, the whole development has been positive, and Sean and, fellow artists, they're great. You know, I'm always for advancement, mm-hmm. and, I'm constantly engaged with guys that have vision, and they're on the move and everything, and I'm sort of, the old woman with the gray hair, and I say, yes, let's go, do it.
Have you always been that kind of person?
Yes.
You strike me as, like, just in the brief time I've gotten to know you, as kind of that person. And this is the other thing that I always get weary of when we have these kind of conversations, was just like this perception that change wasn't happening until X or until Y.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Phyllis, can you tell me, has there been change that people just haven't appreciated, and now, perhaps things are reaching a kind of critical mass, so to speak?
Well, I almost understand the question, but basically...
Yeah, sorry, it's a little long.
What I think is the fact that people in that area are used to kindness, and it seems like these artists, these new guys, have a sincere... appreciation or concern about the people. So therefore, mm-hmm. it's a happier, it seems like everybody is sort of gelling and mm-hmm. coming together. It's like, the old lady that's walking down the street, hey, good morning or hello. And they're smiling. It's like, yeah, we're going to come back. And
so, I guess this is just, our team, we perceive that things are starting to be different there, change. I don't, maybe too early to say positive, negative, or whatnot, but do you perceive a similar change or is this just us?
I do.
And can you talk to me about specifically what that change is you've noticed?
Well, the change, basically, I think, would be the mood of the people. I don't know. I guess I would say that Kansas City has always been kind of strange, but... when things happen, they come together. It's a city and it acts like a town, and especially our little niche. It acts like a town, like the Royals. Okay, everybody's happy about it. Well, the whole city's happy about it, but we're happy about it too. And I think people feel real comfortable when they bring their children around. I think that the wives and the ladies and, I think it's just going to be a great little area. It's growing.
And do you find that there's more foot traffic, more, car traffic, people who come in their cars and get out and walk, 2 feet rather than walking to your barber shop?
Definitely more foot traffic.
Mm-hmm. And has that impacted your business?
It has. Yes, it has. Actually, I've always had a variety of people. I've always had a good mix. However, we're getting, even more of a mixture. Like, there's different ethnic groups like black, white, Asian, Hispanic. I mean, everybody just comes in the barbershop. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. They just sit down and they walk around. They look at the art. They look at Sean's place and have coffee. And, they go around the corner. So it's all positive to me.
And that change, how recent has it been for you, that kind of like demographic shift and in terms of your clientele?
Well, as Sean said, we had Redeemer Fellowship to come in. And I've been a member at First Calvary for 20, 25 years. And Redeemer has been there like 6 or 7 years. And they are on the cutting edge. These guys are so, you know, progressive and everything. It's like, they're excited. I'm excited. I'm excited. They're excited.
So. And yeah, and help me understand this. So the Church of the Redeemer owns a number of those properties, including the drug store. Mm-hmm. And so you were mentioning that, you know, they have this progressive mindset. How integral are they to kind of, you know, the shape of the neighborhood, what it is today and what it might be in the future? Sean?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really interesting conversation because, like, Solowinski, right, the rules for radicals, like, if you want a community organized, the first rule is go to the churches, right? Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed. And, you know, Kansas City's pretty Bible belty, and you know, there's a church on literally every other corner here.
Yeah.
And that's one of
some
the first...
of them vacant.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. But, you know, I've worked with the Redeemer on and off. I'm not technically a member, but they're very supportive, invested people. And I think that's key. And especially if they're property owners in 10 years, when the streetcar line maybe comes out and property values are tripling, it mm-hmm. will be really interesting to see if they hold ground, because those are the types of businesses that are organizations. They're not a business. They're an organization that will really can kind of craft this new kind of pathway to how do we keep these neighborhoods unique and interesting without the cost of displacement.
Yeah. And Phyllis, have you been feeling any of that displacement or witnessing it in your experience? Like have there been hits and misses in terms of that?
I'm not for sure I understand that, but...
Well, you know, like, so we mentioned, like, this new demographic, you know, in terms of clientele coming in.
Right.
And, you know, Sean and other folks coming in. Has that displaced things that were there that perhaps people weren't aware of?
Oh, absolutely not. Actually, it's increased because the technology, the tech of it, has just overwhelmed, you know, all the old school, all the old school habits. So, you know, Redeemer's very tech, and Sean is very tech. Everybody's tech. They've even got me being technical.
You're just shooting me. You're wearing an Apple Watch. Yeah. Is that what it is?
I didn't know about these things, and it's like, Phyllis, you got to get, you know, hip. And they teach me, and, you know, they're progressive. That area, those people are very progressive, and they're very generous, and I love it there.
So looking forward, Sean, I want to hear from you. What are your goals for the next, you know, hopes and aspirations for the neighborhood in the next year and, you know, even a little longer term, 4 years
Yeah,
out?
Yeah. I mean, I think so we've had the artists in the space for about a year now. So I think we're starting to figure out ways in which we can engage and collaborate with the community a little bit more. I think, you know, a goal hesitant to announce this on the air, but one of my goals is to fix that clock tower. That will be one of my goals as creative liaison.
Why is that important to you?
Well, I mean, it's a great symbol. Well, first of all, it's a symbol for the city, but also, I mean, to tell you what time it is in a digital way, you know, like in this fast-paced tech, you know, and to be able to look up and know exactly what time it is, I think is the ultimate gesture of telling somebody you care about them, right?
It's similar into, like, you know, it's something we used to ask strangers pretty frequently. Hey, do you have the time? Now I have an iPhone that tells me that. But almost as a, are you saying, like, kind of in a metaphorical way, is telling the city, hey, in case you're wondering, here's the time.
Yeah, well, it's a symbol of regeneration in the neighborhood, right? I mean, one thing, I mean, to be honest, if we want to talk about, like, displacement, let's displace the 2 payday loans that are across the street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, those predatorial practices are, like, killing that neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, it's about understanding this.
Do they know that? Do they know that that's the way you feel about your neighbors?
Yes and no. I think it's pretty clear. But I mean, for me, it's about, like, how do we create collaborative, healthy, meaningful relationships between the people that have been there? And then also, you know, Kansas City is growing. I mean, like, what do they say? $1 billion of investment on the streetcar lines, which is only just 3 miles long. That's insane. Mm-hmm. And that's going to cause some various serious issues if we don't start to talk about these things now. Mm-hmm. And especially if it starts to come up Main Street, people mm-hmm. buying property, sitting on that property, then all of a sudden streetcars complete, property values triple. So for me, it's really important. I think Redeemer is willing to have that conversation. Phyllis and I are really willing to have that conversation. And a lot of the businesses that are starting to pop up there are wanting to have that kind of conversation about how do we keep it in this kind of unique, kind of awkward T of a intersection, right? Mm.
Phyllis, I'm curious, what are your hopes? You know, we have 6 months left in the year. What small goal or aspiration for the neighborhood, and then more longer term, what do you see as the future of Westport and Main?
The future, I would say, would be to continue doing what we did the first Friday, and that is bringing the community together. Mm-hmm. And by us bringing the community together and everyone feeling happy and everything, and, you know, just keeping the neighborhood. We've got, you know, the flower pots, and, you know, they've done a lot of beautification to mm-hmm. it, to the area, and it's all positive. And I'm just really, really excited about it.
Yeah, okay. Main Core's been there for a minute.
Well, Sean Starowitz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Phyllis Manley, thank you. And looking forward to coming and checking in with you guys again, maybe 6 months or a year, seeing how the neighborhood has changed. You're listening to Central Standard, and we're going to take a quick break. We'll be switching gears and looking at how much influence does a superintendent have. We'll want to hear from you. How significant is the superintendent in your child's district? Call 816-235-2888 to join that conversation. We'll be back shortly.